Welcome to Lighthouse Church today. We're glad you're here. We have been taking the last few weeks to go through a short series that we have called The Comeback. And it has been basically our study of what we think is the greatest story that Jesus ever told, the story of the prodigal son. He told a lot of great stories, and we haven't even seen some of the better ones yet, but this might be the greatest one. And we've done it for the last few weeks. Today, we're going to do something a bit unusual. I'm going to be giving you a different take on this story. Now, I've been pastor for over 27 years now. I have taught the story of the prodigal son so many times over those years. I have taught it. I have done sermons on it. I've done series on this story, right? We've done small groups. There's a book by Timothy Keller called The Prodigal God. I've read that book. I've led two small groups through that book, and another group in our church had that themselves without me just recently gone through that book. Such a good book, right? And I've actually taught that book as a sermon series years ago one time as well, about a dozen years ago. So we have really taught this story many times, including the last 3 weeks. Now, why am I saying that? Because what I'm about to do today is I've never done before. I'm about to take this story in a different track than I ever have before. We're going to make this the most unusual message from the story of the prodigal son, which means if you're hearing this for the first time today in the room or online or watching it later, and this is your first time hearing us or me speak about the prodigal son today, it will not be a normal take, which means what I would encourage you to do is go to our website and find the audio or video leak of the message of the last two messages, last 2 weeks. That will give you a better sense of the story, because today I'm going to go a different type of direction, okay? What I'm looking at today is I want to talk about what makes this father so remarkable. Why is he such a great leader? Because ultimately, this is a fictional story, a fictional character. But this father in the story pictures God. The story of the two sons, we're the two sons. And the father pictures God in his heart. And ultimately, as we read the story and we see the father in the story, though he's not a person, he's a person in a story, we understand through him how God responds to us. Because we could say it this way, that God always makes a way back for a comeback. That God always makes a way back for a comeback. That's the gospel. That's what we celebrate every single week. And the reason we can do what we do is because God has done that for you and he has done that for me. And so because of that, that's why we've told the story the last couple of weeks. But the question then becomes, how can we do the same thing? Because ultimately, we're made in God's image. We are image bearers, and not just in how we're created, but in how we are called to live godly or God-like lives. We are to follow the paths. And how can we, like the Father in the story, like God does for us, how do we make it possible for people to come back home or to come back in? And so I want to talk today about leading a comeback. Leading a comeback. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you 10 leadership principles today on this topic from this story. Again, I've never done this before with the story of the prodigal son. So that's why I said go back and listen to the last couple weeks if you missed them for a more conventional sermon. But today I want to talk leadership for a bit. 10 leadership principles in this story. Now here's the thing. That's a lot. Honestly, I could take this and make this a 10-week series. But I'm going to do it all in one Sunday today. Not a reasonable request, I know. Okay? I'm involved as a pastor. I do a lot of counseling and life coaching. The last many years, I've been involved in business coaching with a network of people and people I get to influence and speak to in one-on-one calls or in groups. And I will tell you, if I was teaching this to in that setting, I would make this. If I was talking to a group of leaders, I would make this 10 different sessions on leadership. I'm going to give it all to you in one day. So basically, I'm about to open up a fire hose. You ever been in front of a fire hose and get hose? It's just like intense. It's coming at you 100 miles an hour, which is how I talk anyhow. It's coming at you. So here's what I want you to do. When you go home, if you're going to leave here later and say, oh, Arlo, that was so much, it was overload, because you got to one concept and I was barely catching it, and then you move to the next, and woo, I'm telling you up front, that's how it's going to feel. But here's what you can do. Some of you are going to grasp this quicker than others. So what I'm going to encourage all of you to do today is this. I'm going to encourage you to write these down as we go or take a picture of the screen and come back to it later. You can go to the go online and watch it later in smaller pieces, and you could take each of these 10 points and spend 10 days, one on each point for 10 days or one a week for 10 weeks. You don't have to absorb it all today, even though I'm going to give it all to you today. In fact, maybe for somebody, you just need to take one or two that apply to where you are now and work on just those one or two. So it's a lot, and I'm telling you that up front. But I have been working on this for weeks. I knew this day was coming. Anthony and I have talked about what a load this is going to be, and here we go. Before I get into the story, we're going to read the story again. No new verses today, just the story of the prodigal son all over again. Before I read it, I want to say something else. Someone here might be saying, Arlen, that's great, but here's the problem. It's not that it's so many 10 points. The problem is that it doesn't apply to me, Arlen, because I am not a leader. I want to push back on that right now. I want to push back on that right now, okay? There is a leader in you, in all of you. And I want to make this very clear. Leadership is not about a position or a title. People can have power and not be leaders. You have power and be a dictator, you're not a leader. You have a position at your job, be a manager and not be a leader. Leadership is not about a title or position. Leadership is ultimately, there's a lot of ways you can define leadership, but it's ultimately influence, okay? And you can lead when you're in charge, and you can lead when you're not in charge. In fact, there's a whole talk about how to lead when you're not in charge. Because leadership is influence, and there's a leader in all of you today. And I want to stir that up, and you can lead. You can be a leader as a wife in your marriage, as a husband in your marriage, as a mom or dad in your home, as a son or daughter in your family, as a employer or a boss or an employee or a coworker, as a friend in your friend circle, as a person in your faith community. There's a leader in you, and I want to inspire that in you today because we need to believe that God can use us to influence and affect great things all around us in every facet of our lives. So today I want to give you 10 leadership principles from this story, Leading a Comeback. Let's read the story and pause along the way. Ready? Verse number 11, here goes. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now before you die. Now, I don't want to rehash the whole story, but I don't want to miss this point early on. The son was saying to his dad, I wish you were dead, because if you die, I get what I really want. I get your inheritance. But you won't die, and I can't get the inheritance, so how about we pretend you're dead? Give me the money so I can have it now, and I can go on and live my life without you. I can move away because I don't care about you. I care about the money I get when you're gone. And it was hurtful. And the father could have said, you little brat, get out of my house. You're not welcome here. I'm going to disown you. But the father does not do that. In verse 12, it says, so his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. He goes through all the trouble of liquidating assets and getting it divided up to where his younger son could have his portion and the rest would stay with the father until he dies and gives it to the other son as his portion. But he says to the younger son, here's your piece of the pie. And someone might say, well, that's a terrible decision. He was enabling that kid, wasn't he? I mean, he wasn't ready to handle that. You just enabled him to make terrible choices and lose it all. And maybe so. I mean, it's just an analogy. It's not even the main point of Jesus telling the story. Maybe it is enabling. But I think differently. I believe the father knew that his son was only going to learn through failure, his own failures, as painful as they would be. Had the father just kicked his son out of the house, his son would have been destitute, it would have been in the same mess, but he would have said, my father didn't care about me, and I'm broken, it's my father's fault. By giving him what he asked for, the son couldn't say his father didn't care. And when he lost it all, he couldn't say it was his father's fault, he was broken, he knew it was his own fault, and that was the pathway for him to realize, it's me. And the father took the path that he knew his son needed to learn through his own failures, even though they'd be painful. So the father decided to give him what he asked for. Which brings me to the first four leadership principles I'm going to start with today. What do you do to lead a comeback? And specifically in this part of the story, when someone is bucking up against you and offending you with what they're saying to you or making choices that bother and upset you for their sake. How do you lead a comeback? Number one is this, lead with humility. See, what do you mean? See, the temptation in all of us, when someone puffs up against us, our temptation is to puff up back, isn't it? No one talks to me that way. No one whoops. I'm not a doormat. I'm not going to be treated that way. It's just human nature. But only through pride comes contention, Proverbs says. Only through pride comes strife. We can puff up and say, I'm going to match your intensity. But when someone is doing that and we're supposed to be looking to lead, you're not leading when you're following someone's emotions. They get upset, so you match them. They start us, you equal it. That is not leading. That's following. And leaders have to be willing to understand that if someone doesn't calm down and put the pride or the emotion aside and think through what needs to be done and take a humble approach, we're not going to de-escalate. We're not going to get things far. But I can't do that when it's all about me and my image. Do you know who I am? I'm your father. You don't talk to me that way, right? Instead, he leads with humility. And boy, I tell you, this principle is worth a whole trip today. If we could get this figured out, Jesus calls us to servant leadership. And if we could figure that out, we'd all be better off. Number one, lead with humility. Number two, operate proactively, not reactively. Now, I've spoken about being proactive versus reactive through the years. But in this particular context where someone's making bad choices or confronting you in a painful way, what does this mean in today's story? To be proactive is to say, what can I do in this circumstance? A reactive person says, I can't do anything. There are no good choices here. All my choices are bad because of what that person is doing. Or because of my circumstances, I have no good choices. Proactive person says, but what can we do? What can I do? The reactive person says, you're not understanding. There's nothing I can do. Choice A is bad for this reason. Option B is bad because of this thing that this person did. Option C stinks for that reason. I have no good options. And reactive people either do nothing or they complain or they make a bad choice and justify and blame it on the circumstance or other people. It's just reactive. Being proactive, especially in this circumstance, is to say, okay, I don't have any great choices. All my options are less than ideal, but what's the best one I have of the unideal options? Think of the father in the story. The father's like, what can he do with that son who's demanding his inheritance, wishing he was dead? The father could have done one of three things. He could have said to the son, you're out of here. I'm disowning you, or I'm just kicking you out at least. You're on your own, get nothing from me. But that would have caused the kid to be in a whole different kind of mess, like we mentioned earlier. That's not ideal. He could have said, I'm just going to say no for now, and I'm going to ignore him. He keep fussing me day upon day. He's going to batter me around. I'm just going to let him do it. That's no way to live. That's not ideal. Option three is to say, fine, here it is, go. But then he's going to ruin it all. He's not prepared for that. That's not ideal. I have no good options. Reactively, I have no good options. I'll just do something crazy and blame him. But proactive people say, what's the best option? And the father looks at his possibilities and says, the only choice with a pathway back for my son in this case is to give him what he's asking for. And so he did it because he felt like that was the best option. Proactive people say, here's what I can do. It's not, I'm going to moan about it. I'm not going to blame and point fingers. I'm not going to throw a fit. I'm just going to do the best choice I have, and I'm going to move forward. And the father does that. Principle number three, give them the autonomy to make decisions. Give them the autonomy to make decisions. This is hard to do for those of us who are control people or micromanagers. No micromanager ever consider themselves one, but it's hard to do, right? But they might make a mess. The son in the story did make a mess. If I give him that inheritance, he'll make a mess. He did. But the father understood that he was going to eventually get that inheritance anyway. So it's better to do it while he was still alive to help him clean it up afterwards. We struggle with giving people autonomy because sometimes it's just a control thing. I'm going to apply this for just a moment here. I'm going to apply this to your job in case you're a leader or at your job. I'm going to apply this to your family as a mom and dad. In the job front, some people struggle to ever let go of control because they're afraid someone won't do it as well. It's one thing to say these are our principles we operate by. It's another thing to say, I'm going to give you some room to make decisions and do things without me pulling all the levers. Like, yeah, but they'll make a mess. Well, not a crisis. Don't give them the ability to destroy a business, but can you give them a chance to do it not as well as you? If they do it 70% as well as you, they're going to learn and get better. If you give them chances, they're going to become as good as you or better, and you could do more things. But we control so much. We hold ourselves back. We hold other people back. And in this story today, it's a father. And moms and dads, we understand this. When our kids are little, there's not a lot of autonomy going on there, is there? We don't sit there and say, well, you know, if you want to put the fork in the light socket, you just learn for yourself. It's okay. You're kind of like, I'm making some decisions for you. But sometime before they are an adult and they're free to do anything they want to do and you have no authority other than any influence you have, we understand that we tend to move from the disciplined training years into those coaching years as they get closer to adulthood. And sometimes we struggle with that because we don't know. And we don't want to give them the, sometimes you have to say yes or no clearly, but sometimes you got to learn to say, here's what I think is best, here's why, I'm going to give my input, but I'm going to let you do what you want to with that and figure it out. You say, yeah, but what if they make a bad choice? It's easy to want to wrap them in bubble wrap or put them in a bubble, but eventually they're going to get their autonomy anyway. And sometimes we're not in a spot to help them learn to navigate those things because we didn't touch it until we were out of the picture. The father in the story here could have said, no, you'll wait till I die. The father eventually dies. The son then gets the inheritance. The son then runs off and wastes it all. And when he wastes it all, where does he go? His father's dead. Is he going to go back home to his older brother who wasn't, we saw last week, that ain't going to go over very well, is it? He could have gone any number of directions. So what's he going to do? So the father says, if I do it now while I'm alive, maybe he comes back and I'm here to help him figure it out. And boy, I tell you, it's hard to let go of control. But if you want to be helping people, if you want to lead well, you got to learn to give people autonomy to make decisions. Principle number four, keep your eyes on their potential. It's a very dangerous spot when we start looking at people and saying, you're worthless. Look at what you did. There's no hope for you, right? We want to write people off and say, there's no hope for you. The father could say to his son, you're a brat. You'll never get a penny because you can't handle it. And we could do that sometimes with people. Some of us have done that to people. We're like, you show me who you are, I'll never trust you again. And that's because sometimes people prove that they are continuing down the path they've been on. But a better, there's got to be a way of looking at people and saying, I believe that there's a better version of you. The father looks at the son in the story and he says, there's more to you than this moment right here. I'll focus on what you can be, not what you're doing now. And I believe you can be back. If you can look at people in your life, and instead of writing people off and just being done and scrapping them and as the refuse of the world, to look at people who are making bad decisions or offending you and what they're saying to you and say, I believe there's more to you than this moment right here. And that takes a leader to do that. To say, I'm going to focus on what you can be and not what you're doing just now. The father does that. Well, those principles apply to the beginning of the story. Now we need to move ahead later in the story. Look at verse 13. A few days later, the younger son packed all of his belongings and he moved to a distant land. And there he wasted all of his money in wild living. See, I told you, bad idea. Sure enough, about the time his money ran out, a great famine swept over the land and he began to starve. No surprise. He persuaded a local farmer to hire him, and the man sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. The young man became so hungry that even the pods that he was feeding the pigs looked good to him, but no one gave him anything. Verse 17 says this, when he finally came to his senses, and this is the key moment. You see, this is the moment we're afraid some people never come to. Some people don't seem to come to quickly. Or, you know, like, when will they come to their senses? Maybe they don't. But the father had hoped this son would come to his senses. And in this moment, it happens. This is what he was banking on, hoping for. The boy comes to his senses, and he said to himself, at home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare, and here I am dying of hunger. It's funny because back home used to be prison I was getting away from. Now it's home to go back to. It was a terrible dad I hated. Now it's the man who takes good care of his servants. He's changing his perspective. He's growing. He says, I will go home to my father and say, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant. He's actually trying to make, for the first time in his life, good decisions. Before, it's like, recklessly, I know what I'm doing. Get me out of here. Now he's like, I'm going to go back to the people I blew off. I'm going to be responsible for the first time. He's like, well, it's too late now. He's lost everything. But all he can do is either die or figure out where to go from here. And he decides to do the smart thing, perhaps for the first time. Verse number 20. So he returned home to his father, And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. He ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son." He's taking ownership. He's getting ready to be asked for a job as a servant, but the father interrupts him. Verse 22, his father said to the servants, "Quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. And kill the calf, get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet, and kill the calf that we have been fattening. We must celebrate with a feast. Why? For this son of mine was dead and is now returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found." And so the party began. Earlier, we saw some leadership principles about leading a comeback that talked about when someone's making confrontational pain for you or making bad decisions that you don't know what to do, how to lead. And I gave you some principles. Now I want to talk for two principles about what to do once someone makes the mess. And it's too late. They made some bad choices and they're trying to figure it out. Like, well, it's a little late now to figure it out, but they're trying to go from there. They're trying to figure out how to just claw back up or go on the right path from where they are. How do we lead in that moment? Number five is this. Celebrate without shaming. Oh, I can't tell you how important it is that we learn to celebrate people's turnarounds without shaming. It's so easy to say, "Well, what do we have here? I told you so." Those are terrible words. Those are so unconstructive, aren't they? How does that help anybody? Like, well, they need to know. Do they? They probably know. What's the point? Is it to try to manipulate next time? You better listen to me next time. What's the point of "I told you so"? Celebrate without shaming. You know what? Here's what I'm saying. I'm saying don't gloat when you're right. Nothing is less attractive on a person when they gloat when they're right. Nothing's less attractive on a leader when they gloat when they're right. It's gross. The father could have sat on the porch and said, "Well, look who's coming home. I'm going to make him walk the whole green mile until he gets here, and I'll be standing here nodding." The son could have been walking down the road and seeing, "There's the house, I can see it. Oh, someone's on the porch. I think it's my dad." Gets closer, he's got his arms crossed, he's nodding his head, he's scowling or he's smirking. Oh boy, not in his stomach. He gets close enough and he squirms like a worm and throws himself at his mercy, and dad's like, "Well," right? But the father says, the son's coming home, life has humbled him. So the father humbles himself. He scoops up his robes. He runs like a fool down the road, humbling himself as well to hug him and celebrate and say, "I'm just glad you're back." Celebrate without shaming. Don't gloat when you're right. Here's the thing. Be happier that they came back than that you called it. Well, I called it. Who cares? Be happier that they're coming back to a better spot in their life, to rebuild something, to figure it out. Number six, this is important. I need more time than I have. Number six is reframe the narrative. Reframe the narrative. What does that mean? In the story, the younger son was coming home with a narrative. What was his narrative? "I'm a hot mess. I am an idiot. I listened to nobody. You were right. I was wrong. I lost everything. I've lost everything. I'm so terrible. I'm broke. I've sinned. I don't even deserve to be a son anymore. Maybe, just maybe, I can convince you to let someone like me be one of the servants." That's the narrative he's coming home with. And the father says, "My son is back. Get the clothes in the house and put them on him. We're going to have a party right now because he's doing something he should be doing. He's getting home." When people are in a bad spot, sometimes they have, and we've been there, you build a narrative about yourself that's negative and is hopeless. And if you're going to help someone find their way forward as a leader, whether you're in charge or not, you've got to learn to reframe the narrative. In other words, affirm their future despite what has happened. Or let me say it this way, we must build in them what they cannot see in themselves because of their brokenness. I've been in spots in my life where I felt a little broken by something. Maybe I did something, or maybe life has just happened to me, and I got into a space where I'm thinking, "I don't think I'm any good. I'm a failure. I'm this." I've been there. I'm not sure if you've ever been there before. When you're in a bad spot like that, you know what we appreciate? Someone who comes along and believes in us. Someone who comes along and builds a path forward with us because they see something in us. And if you can figure out that one of the best things you can do for somebody when they're in a bad narrative because of what they've done or what's happened to them is you just say, "No, listen, I see something here. Here's a path. You're gonna do great. I'm worthless. No, you're valuable. I'm not even deserve to be a servant. No, you're my child in the story. I made horrible choices. No, you've made the right choice. You came back. Do you see what I'm saying? I made a mess. No. You're making good choices right now to figure out where to go from here. That's awesome. That's who you are. That's who you are. I'm going to affirm that person, not the one who made a mess, because that's who I see in you. We're going to build a new story here. Reframe the narrative. It's such a big idea. I don't have enough time for it. We're going to pivot to the last part of the story, because now comes the part where the father, his son is back. It's all fixed. But now the other son, the one who's been the good son, the one who's always been at home and never broken his family's heart, is now about to cause father pain. Look at verse 25. Meanwhile, the older son was in the fields working. When he returned home, he heard music and dancing in the house, and he asked one of the servants what was going on. Your brother is back, he was told, and your father has killed the fattened calf. We are celebrating because of his safe return. Verse 28, the older brother was angry and would not go in. His father came out and begged him. But he replied, all these years I've slaved for you and never once refused to do a single thing you told me to. And in all that time, you never gave me even one young goat for a feast with my friends. Yet when this son of yours comes back after squandering your money on prostitutes, you celebrate by killing the fattened calf. I've been good, they've been not, I'm here, you're celebrating, I'm upset. He's dressing down his father. And all of a sudden, the one that was always good is now hurtful. And he's demeaning. And the father's in a tough spot. And he's going to respond to him in a minute here, but I want to give you the next two principles of leadership when leading a comeback. Because now this son needs to come back. He needs to come back in. Principle number 7 is this: lead with humility again. You're like, Arlen, you already made that point. That was point one. Quit. We're moving on. What are you doing repeating point one? Did you run out of points and wanted to make it equal 10? No. This is one of the greatest principles you'll ever learn, is that as we go through our journey in life, we have to keep coming back to the same foundational principles even as we get older. So I've already learned that lesson. We get to learn it again. I've already done it that way. We get to do it again. Right leadership is right leadership, whether you're new at it or whether you've been doing it for 100 years. You can't say, I've been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, moving on. You can't say, I've graduated from that, now I can be smug and arrogant. The father could have said, I was right about my first son. I didn't know for a long time. I doubted myself. People talk bad about us. But he's back. I'm happy. And you're not going to treat me this way on a happy day, because I've earned the right to puff up now. But the father had to do the same thing with his second son they did with his younger son in the area of humility. He had to say, I'm not going to get anywhere if I'm that person. And I want to say, I wish you could move past some things, but some of the stuff that you have to do when you're leading well, you're going to have to keep doing. Little weird illustration, but when Michelle and I were first in ministry as a pastor's family at the age of 25, there was many times in our dysfunctional type background we had back then where things would happen, we'd be criticized or, looked down upon or mistreated or, just it was difficult. I could tell you stories, it doesn't matter, because that's everybody's story, it was not just ours. But for us, I had to look at Michelle sometimes when we were upset or hurt, and I would say to her, for our sake, for my sake too, I'd say, hey, big picture, we're in it for the long run. And I would say, time will validate us. And that was really good advice that guided us through some tough moments so we wouldn't mishandle it. But you know, I'm 27 and a half years further down the road than that. And you know what? Something could happen this week that I've got to say, big picture, we're in it for the long run. Time will validate us. You don't graduate sometimes from some principles. Principles are principles, even 30 years later. And if you're going to be effective as a leader, you can't say, I stopped doing that because I've gotten too big for that. We must lead with humility again. Principle number 8 is a big one. They all are. But number 8 is this: lead the way they need. Lead the way they need. What does that mean? It means that people are not all cookie cutter. They're not all the same. In the story today, the father had two very different sons. One son was lost he had a high time preference mindset. The other had a low time preference mindset. One was lost in party now. The other was lost in responsibility and self-righteousness. It looked a lot better, but in the end, they both were lost in different ways. Neither one had the right heart towards their father. They were both trying to get what they could out of him in their own way, in their own time. And the father handles the boys differently. Did you notice that in the story? You got to lead the way they need. They're not the same person. For example, let me just remind you of the story. When the younger son says, "Dad, give me my inheritance now. I wish you were dead. I want to leave." There's zero record in the story of the father arguing with the son about it. Maybe he did, but it's not written down in the story Jesus told. He gives him the money. When the son leaves home, there's zero reference to the father chasing him down and trying to talk him into coming back home. None. He just lets them go. But when the older son is outside, won't come into the house, the party, what does the father do for the older son? He leaves the house, he goes to that son, and he persuades and talks to him. Why different? Because they were different boys. And one of the things you learn in leadership and your business and everything else you do is people aren't the same. Your principles might be the same, but how you handle people's situations and temperaments must be, well, you must be flexible. You must be adaptable. Moms and dads, we should know this. If you have multiple kids, your children are not all the same, and what works for one child won't always work for the other child. Well, this is just how I am. Get with it or get out. The worst thing I could ever do is say, "It worked for your siblings, so what's your problem?" Maybe it's me asking myself, are they the same as the other person? Do I need to lead differently? Not that my principles change, but that how I approach them, how I work, what we do must be designed to help them. Because I'm not trying to be stubborn. I'm trying to help. Lead the way they need. No one to chase, no one to let go, no one to do this, and no one to do that. There's a lot more to be said about that, but we got to keep moving for sake of time. Look what the father says to the son. Don't mind the noise above. I don't know why that's going on. We'll figure that out later. Just pay no attention to it if you can. Luke 15:31, his father said to him, "Look, dear son, you have always stayed by me, and everything I have is yours." Look what he's saying to his son. His son is disrespecting him. He's dressing him down. And the father's like, "You're my dear son. You're saying you've never done wrong. I'm agreeing with you. You say you've never gone the way. I'm agreeing. You've always stayed by me. I'm acknowledging what you're saying. Everything I have is yours. It's okay." And this brings me to point number 9. This one I need a whole Sunday or two for. But number 9 is this. Provide emotional safety. Boy, that's just a big idea. Provide emotional safety. You see, when the father is being told his son is outside and angry, the father probably didn't feel very safe emotionally, did he? When he went out to talk to him and his son dressed him down and told him a few things, the father probably didn't feel very safe emotionally. But again, he's the leader. You don't follow and say, "I'm going to do the same thing back to you. I'm going to make you feel unsafe with how I respond to you." The son already didn't feel safe, did he? Why not? Because the father is... he's upset already. And you ever try to help somebody? You ever try to use logic with somebody who's upset and it's like nothing's working because you can't get past the emotions of the moment? We're saying logically sound things, but you can't even understand this each other because of the emotions. And you know what you have to do? You got to start by providing emotional safety. And the father does that. By the way, he did it for both of his sons. When the youngest son came back, he's like, "Dad, I blew it. I lost everything. It's all gone. I'm an idiot. I've sinned against you. I don't deserve to be your son anymore." And dad's like, "Shh, no, you are my son. We're going to have a party. We got to figure that out. We got to figure that stuff out later. But today, you're home. We're celebrating. You're my son. We're okay." Emotional safety. His older son's out there upset. "I've been good. I've been here. And what's that? You're an idiot. You don't care about me. You care about them." And the dad's like, "Hold on now. You're my dear son. But I'm not going to tell you what you need to do. You're not ready to hear that. I'm going to say, listen, I love you." He says, "Look, you're saying you've been faithful. I'm going to repeat that back to you so you know I'm hearing you. Let me tell you, you have always been here. You have been great. Look, you need to know this. Everything that is yours. Let's just get this out because you're worried." He's saying, "You're worried about how this affects you. Where do you stand now that he's back? But you're still here, and you're still loved, and nothing between us has changed." Here's the thing. One of the most underrated ideas of leading, whether you're in charge or not, leadership is about listening. Listening helps you understand where they're coming from and where you need to lead to. But we don't figure that if we're not willing to listen. And here's why. Don't miss this now. Because it's hard to change someone's thinking if you don't understand what they're thinking. I'm going to say that again because it's important. It's hard, it's hard to change someone's thinking when you don't understand what they're thinking. And you got to start by not only understanding it, but making sure that they understand that you understand it and getting things safe emotionally. Like, Arlen, that sounds like a soft skill. It might be a soft skill in business, but it is a very powerful one to provide emotional safety. The Father says in verse 32, once he's established that, then look what he says last, verse 32. He says, we had to celebrate this happy day, son. We had to do this. For your brother was dead and has come back to life. He was lost, but now he is found. He looks at his son and says, son, this is the right thing to do because your brother, by the way, notice your brother. What did the older son say? Dad, this son of yours has been wasting his life. This son of yours is back. And the dad says, he's your brother. He's your brother. And he was dead, but he's come back to life. Listen, this is the right thing to do. You know what he's doing? He's calling his older son to remember his relationship with his brother. You're his older brother. Which brings us to our last point of leadership in leading a comeback. Number 10 is inspire leadership in others. The father is saying to his older son, listen, that brother of his, you need to think of him for a minute. Where he is and what he needs from us now. How can you help? I'm trying to help him. He's come back and he's beat down. He's broken. He's saying he doesn't deserve to be family anymore. I'm trying to help him rebuild because I care about him. I'm trying to lead him forward. But you're his big brother. Think about him and how you can help him now. We got to go in the house and celebrate him today and put this thing together going forward. You can't do that if you're in an us versus them mentality. If you're it's about you. If he's the ops, you're not going to get anywhere. But if he's your brother and you have a chance to help, then you can come alongside of me. He's saying to his older son, I see greatness in you, how you can help your brother, be a brother to him. You know, if you think about it, this is what Jesus was doing in the whole story in the first place. Do y'all remember why Jesus is even telling the story? What was going on in the room at the time? He had a crowd of people. Many of them were religious people who liked to come for gatherings to hear about God, and many of them liked to come to because they were growing. Others came because they wanted to find fault, because that's not how we lead God's way. They had opinions, but some were coming for just growth reasons, and there was a mixed crowd there amongst the religious people. But then you have the other group, the tax collectors and the other types of sinners, whatever that means. Because all of us were sinners, but you know, when you're a sinner, but they're a sinner, there's a certain category going on here, and they're like, they don't belong here. This is our space. They've made their choices. You made your bed, go lie in it. This is who we are. And they were upset that Jesus was associating with them, that he's eating with them, that he's welcoming them. What's this about? And Jesus is saying to the religious people in the room, guys, I need you to be like an older brother. I need you to help me welcome them. I'm calling you to seek and to save the younger brothers around you. He's trying to inspire them to say, if you're that spiritual, step up. It's Galatians 6:1, right? Galatians 6:1. If someone's overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, that's me, good, restore them in a spirit of meekness because of yourself. What? The idea is that we're supposed to step up. And Jesus is trying to inspire leadership in others like the father is doing to his older son. By the way, it's what I've been trying to do to you today. That's why at the beginning of this message, I said to you, you are a leader. There's a leader in you. Some of you have a hard time believing that. Not me. Yes, you. You're a leader. You can be. It's not about a position. It's not about a title. Lots of folks with a position and title, all they have is power to abuse. Leadership is influence, and all of us can lead. Now, I'm done. I told you it was a hose, a fire hose. That was a lot of information to throw your way. But some of you might be saying, Arlen, it's not that it was so much information. It was. My problem is that it's hard. That's hard to do. Let me be honest with you. This is hard. I know. If it was easy, everyone would be doing it. Don't we all crave that? You know, we live in a day and age where everyone wants to be an influencer. I would love to be somebody that people just look to me and think I'm awesome. And when I talk, they're like, oh, whenever I say, they do it. And when I say things, they're like, oh, that's wonderful. You know, and I just, I'm amazing to everybody. And they just do what I say without me having to push them too hard. And yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it? But it doesn't work like that. Listen, leadership is most necessary and most required when things get messy. And that's when we all want to shrink back. But that's when leaders step up. When things are hard and when things are messy. And you can do that. And ultimately, here's the good news. This is a picture of Jesus. This is a picture of God's love. The story of the Father pictures God to us. You know who we are in the story, right? We're the other sons. Aren't we? We've been lost like a younger son, recklessly this way, or the older son, self-righteously doing the right thing and arrogant. Better than? We've all been one son or the other. In fact, some of us have been both sons. We've been the younger son and the older son. Don't raise your hand if that's you. We've been there, right? I've been lost both directions, probably. But here's the point of the story. The Father in the story pictures God. God does lead us like that. Here's the good news. Whether you find yourself in the pig pen or on the porch, your Father really loves you. And he's saying to you, come back in. Come back home. Just come back. But he's also calling us to be like him. We're image bearers. We're to be godly people living godly or godlike lives. So how can we do the same? Apply those 10 principles. Now, I'm not going to reteach them, but I want to quickly put them on the screen one last time and one after another, just remind you of these principles. How do you lead a comeback, whether people are making bad decisions or being confrontational to you and you don't know what to do? How do you lead a comeback? Number one, you're going to lead with humility. What are we going to do? We're going to lead with humility. Number two, what are we going to do? We're going to operate proactively, not reactively. That's a big idea. Number three, what are we going to do? We're going to give them the autonomy to make decisions. Number four, we're going to keep our eyes on their potential. What about when the mistake is made, when the damage is done, when they're trying to figure out how to go from there, how to get back on their feet? What do we do? Number five, we're going to celebrate without shaming. Number six, we're going to reframe the narrative. That's a big idea. We're going to help them figure out a better view of who they are and where things are going and what can be. What do we do when new problems arise, when new people surprise us, when new heartache comes, when leadership gets hard in a new and different way? Number seven, we're going to lead with humility again. Number eight, we're going to lead the way they need. How do we do this? How do we lead a comeback? Number nine, we're going to provide emotional safety to those around us so that we can figure out where to go from here, but we got to do that first. And number 10, we're going to inspire leadership in others. And you can do that. You can be that person. There's a leader in you. And ultimately, this is how God leads us. Because, as I said earlier in the sermon, but I want to rephrase it one more time, God made a way back for your comeback. Folks, that's the gospel, isn't it? That's the good news for us all today, that God made a way back for my comeback, for our comeback. We're going to take communion in just a moment here. That's what we celebrate. The cross was Jesus showing us that God was making a way back through his sacrifice, a way back for our comeback. That's the good news. If you've come back at any point in the past, whether as a younger son type or an older son type or both, the reason you were able to come back is because God made a way back for your comeback. When you take communion in a minute, that's what you celebrate. If you have not yet come back, but you're thinking about it, the reason you're thinking about it and leaning into the idea is because God's made a way back for it to be possible. He made a way back. We'll celebrate that because it benefits us. But I hope that today we will also take up the mantle of doing the same for others as God has called us to take the message and bring the good news elsewhere. Let's be the older brothers and sisters we should be. Let's be like the Father.